But it's not the time and the place to, you know, quote unquote, explain how the sausage is made. There's a time and a place for that. And most of the times it's not relevant. Yet it's what we thrive on. We love to, quote unquote, geek out about, you know, those things. But to most senior executives, they just don't care about it in the context of those meetings. They want to know the so what.
Welcome to 33 Tangents, a weekly podcast featuring a rotating panel of co-hosts that all work together in the same company, but live in different areas of the world. The discussions cover a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others. All right, we're back at it again. So it's been a minute, as the kids say.
Yeah, the kids do say that, don't they?
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks since we've done this.
It's been a while.
Yeah, as much as I was trying to prepare for it, we still fell behind. And we've been out. Both of us did a little bit of traveling. We were in Las Vegas for Adobe Summit. And yeah, it's been a few.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And speaking of Adobe Summit, I have to mention it. Like, I mean, I know we have listeners. I know people listen. We do hear feedback. But actually hearing from people in person that they listen, or there was actually a couple people that recognized my voice.
That's the one, like, that's like...
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm actually, I was humbled. I was really, really humbled to, you know, that people actually do listen. And again, I see the numbers, I see the downloads. I know people listen, we hear feedback, but still it'll always be humbling that people want to hear me ramble. And I'll go back to where we started this idea 5 years ago, 6 years ago, even, just an idea of, like, we have some fun conversations, let's record it and see what people think. So yeah, it's totally humbling. And I appreciate all the folks that came up to us and said something and mentioned that they listen. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it really is awesome. And I still kind of get caught off guard by it. I can't remember what event we were at. I don't know if you were there or not in Las Vegas. It was at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, that was last year. I was not there.
What if...
Or 2 years ago. Marketing Analytics Summit two years ago. It was at Caesar's Palace.
I remember being in line at one of the coffee shops there, and I think I had just got off a phone call or something, and like someone in front of me turned around and said, "Wait a minute, are you Jason?" I'm like, yeah. He's like, "I recognize your voice from the podcast." I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
so really cool. Thanks again to everybody who came up to us, talked to us, and mentioned that they listened when we saw them.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Also, what do you think about my tan lines here?
I was wondering if it was the camera or if you were actually out in the sun.
Yeah.
You look burned.
Well, it's mostly the camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am not that color. But you can see the tan line, though.
I can see the tan lines, yeah.
Yeah. It's the camera and it's the, I don't know, it's the glare coming off of this monitor. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, anyway. Interesting. So, as a quick refresher of where we left off before our impromptu unplanned hiatus of a couple of weeks, is we started a series of episodes talking about the concept of boring yet profitable businesses. And we talked about a few. And one of the things we talked about is these... the first thing we talked about is oftentimes the term boring yet profitable is a bit of a pejorative. You know, okay, you make money, you're a profitable business, but you're not really doing anything exciting. Your products aren't fun. But what we came to was these are businesses that for their customers, they're incredibly valuable. The product is seen as a quality product. The experience is a extremely positive experience that folks want to continue to go back and work with these companies. And yes, they fly under the radar, but they are profitable businesses. And let's face it, you got to be profitable to stay in business. You know, you can't run at a deficit and expect to stay in business.
Unless you're a startup or your mommy and daddy are really rich and they just keep giving you money. But for the rest of us.
For the rest of us, yes. So I want to dig into a bit and start to look at our... And where we left that episode was, as we promised the listeners, we would get into the analytics portion of it because we talked about it very broadly. So I want to start to do that and dig into analytics specifically and looking at analytics through this lens of boring yet profitable. And where I want to start today is the question of what is preventing digital analytics from becoming indispensable? Because it's also one of the things we talked about with these businesses, why, you know, they're incredibly valuable to their customers. They become indispensable. Like, you brought up the plumbing supply company, or no, the bolts. Plumbing supply.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But I've seen it with plumbing supply companies where these companies are indispensable to their customers because they're either a high quality product or they know that they're going to get great service from them.
They're reliable.
You know, they're going to be there. You know, they're going to pick up the phone, but it feels like digital analytics just constantly seems to be in this cycle that prevents them from becoming that indispensable, whether you want to call it vendor or part of a business. They're seen as extra. They're seen as nice to have. They're never given the resources, the time, whatever. So let me ask you this. What is preventing digital analytics from becoming that boring yet profitable business, that indispensable part of a business?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of a chicken and egg type of discussion in that ever since I joined the industry back in the early 2000s, it's been underinvested in general. So that's part of it. But then how much of it is on us where, regardless of the level of investment, have we not shown kind of what we can do? So again, it's a chicken and an egg type of discussion. And it's easy to fall into that trap of, well, if we had more resources, more, you know, positioning within the organization, more support, we could do more. And I absolutely agree with that. However, I don't know that it's fair for us to say, and so we're going to kind of throw our hands up in the air. And so I think a lot of it is on us to do what it is that we can do with what we have. So because it's not like we have nothing. We have incredible tools at our disposal. We have data. We have customers. So we can make a difference. And I think for a lot of organizations, there's some pretty... I don't know what the right word is. Traps. There's some common traps that analytics teams tend to fall in. And we've talked about a lot of these in past episodes, but it's things like getting stuck in implementation. And we all know that implementation is an ever evolving thing. It's never a set it and you forget it, you're done. However, it feels like so many organizations get in this trap of building, tearing down, building, tearing down. And that's always the answer of, well, when are we going to be able to get to this thing that we need as a business? Well, as soon as we're done with this next build out, we'll get to that thing. You know, we can get you that thing. And it never arrives because as soon as we're done building, we tear it down and build again. And I think that has been a problem that's plagued us for 20 years in the industry. I think there's a challenge with our general lack of business acumen. And what happens in those cases is we sit down with a marketer, we sit down with a business executive, and we want to talk shop and we talk all this technical jargon that they don't understand. And it's a huge turnoff. And so I think I've shared more than once my story when I was client side inviting the data scientist to an executive readout. And they wanted to talk about all of the models and how they statistically built them and the code processing behind it. No one cared. The executives did not care. They cared about the so what. What does this mean for us and what should we do? And we fall into that trap. And I think part of it is that business type of discussions, I think, are uneasy for a lot of us. And in fact, I've seen content that said that that's not really our job. You know, our job is to provide the data and then walk away. It's not our job to have an opinion. And I think that that has been very poor advice for us, because the business is looking for our opinion. They're not looking for us to make a decision on what they should do, but they're looking for us to have an opinion backed by data that they can take into consideration with other opinions that they're getting from their advisors, from the market, from customers. But we failed to take an opinion. You know, we've kind of put the data out there. We've made some high-level commentary. This number went from, you know, 1 to 3. But we've stopped short of saying, and here's why it matters, and here's why it's important, and here's what our recommendation is. And I think that that getting over that kind of blocker is the thing that would move the needle the most, is getting us from being locked down in the basement to being a step closer to being involved in those critical meetings and becoming that much closer to becoming indispensable, because we have an opinion. We are providing something incredibly meaningful and valuable to our business stakeholders.
I was just taking a couple of notes because I want to dig into a couple of those. So I want to make sure I remembered your list. Because yeah, there's three. Obviously the last one that you mentioned, but there were two earlier ones that really jumped out at me as problems I've seen as well. And the first one is implementation, is getting stuck in this cycle of constant implementation. And I feel like that's rooted in two areas. First, implementation, it's, let's face it, it's an easy way of showing that work is being done. It may not be valuable work. It may be valuable work, but sometimes it's just work. So we can say we got stuff done. We wired up another EVAR. We passed in another custom dimension into our Google Analytics implementation. We deployed a new tag for an event. It's an easy way of showing progress sometimes. So I think we need to definitely get past that. But I also feel like we're stuck there because the industry seems to be in this rut at the moment where it's being driven by sales, new technology, new things. So it's always just deploy the newest thing. So you're stuck there. You never get to really use what you've just deployed because you have to deploy the next thing. It's almost like it's this trend we've been seeing with my son, and we're trying to correct as quickly as we can, is that, like, he gets so excited about opening up the new toy. And I know it's not unique to him, but he gets so excited about opening up the new toy. He plays with it for a day or two and then wants a new toy. And it's like, I think of that with the industry right now. It's the, you get the new tool, you really don't dig into it. You don't really use it. You don't really mature it to give you actionable information. And you're already on to get the thrill of deploying the next one.
Yeah, and you bring up a really important concept that I've just been thinking about recently around kind of this sales-driven thing. I want to believe that the major vendors in the space are making decisions that are positioning us to become more valuable and indispensable as analysts. But sometimes I have to wonder, are we creating things just so we can sell more products? And the reason I've been thinking that, you know, we saw kind of this, I'll call it a debacle with GA4, but we're seeing a similar path now with Adobe and Customer Journey Analytics. And what I mean by that is that, not that these technologies are bad, actually GA4 is much more robust from an analytical perspective. CJA promises to be the same, unlocking data across multiple data stores to get to this point that we've long been talking about of having kind of a 360 view of the customer. But both of those moves are coming at the cost of alienating what has been our primary stakeholders in the digital analytics space for more than two decades, and that is marketers, that is customer experience people, that is product owners, where before they felt like we were creating tools for them to use to better understand the properties that they own, to understand the effectiveness of their marketing spend. But now with GA4 and with kind of what the future looks like for Adobe's customer journey analytics, these people that, you know, had some quote unquote skin in the game are now like, you guys are creating more and more products that are harder and harder for us to use. And at what point in time do we upgrade and upgrade and upgrade and re-implement and re-implement and re-implement to the point where now we're building in a sandbox where it's just us, where the marketers and the product folks are being like, I've had enough of you guys. I'm going to go get my own tool because at least I understand it. And it's something I don't know that we've really been thinking about as an industry. It's how do we balance this need for progress with alienating those that we're serving within our organizations?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that too. And I'm starting to see this growing trend of, I mean, we saw it before where people were struggling to prove the value of analytics. But it felt like at the time, at least the implementers, the analysts, those running the program saw the value. They were struggling to prove the value outside of the organization. I'm starting to see this trend where even the analysts and the implementers are like, dude, what's the value of this tool? I can't even find it.
I mean, if we get there, we have a big problem.
Yeah. It's something that I'm starting to see.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it's not a horrible thing as long as we don't all implode in the process. But you know, for so long, we've allowed the tools to drive and define what it is that we do. Maybe we're getting to this tipping point where analysts finally realize that the tools should be supportive of what we do. And for any good craftsperson, a high quality tool is essential. So I'm not saying that these tools are not an important part of our craft. They are critically important to our craft. But I think we've got it all backwards where we've gone after tools and we've allowed that to define what it is we do, rather than us looking at our craft as being analysts and then going out and hand selecting tools that best align with the type of thing that we're trying to create for our organization. So, you know, maybe this will actually turn out to be a huge positive, but anytime there's change, you go through this painful process where you're kind of knocking off a lot of the rough edges, and some people don't make it, you know, and again, we've kind of talked about it. The analytics teams have been under incredible scrutiny since early 2020, really in 2021, and I haven't seen it let up. And so, you know, if this is going to be emerging out this other side better, it's been incredibly painful, and I still think we have some big storms still to weather.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So then moving on to the next item on your list is the technical jargon. And it does kind of align what we were talking a bit a moment there, like the folks on the ground with the analytics program seeing the value, but struggling to prove the value outside of the organization, and the overuse of technical jargon, and I would even say like industry speak, instead of really trying to improve the, you know, just assuming people understood what you were talking about instead of really trying to help improve the data literacy of the organization.
Yeah, and the one story that I love to tell is sitting in this meeting with a group of analysts and implementers and a few stakeholders from the business. And for what seemed like 20 minutes, the analytics teams had this back and forth around, and they were talking about some A/B tests that were happening. And they had this 20-minute discussion around the technical details of how the data was captured. And then there was almost a argument, but I would call it a debate, around, you know, what's the right statistical method to analyze this? You know, are we taking a Bayesian approach? Are we taking a frequentist approach? And just delving into these statistical nuances. And finally, and this was a VP of customer experience sitting in the room, finally said, guys, I literally don't care about anything that you're talking about. Like, this does not, I don't care about this. What can you tell me about what you learned about how our customers are engaging with our brand? Are they finding what they want? Are they having a good experience? Are we leaving money on the table because they're frustrated? That's what I want to know. You can go have your technical debate somewhere else. I seriously don't care about that. And that may be a little harsh, because I think deep down executives do want to understand that there's rigor and there's structure to doing an analysis, and it's not just an analyst putting their finger to the wind and making shit up. So they do want a sense of comfort that there's actually some rigor to it, but it's not the time and the place to, you know, quote unquote, explain how the sausage is made. There's a time and a place for that, and most of the times it's not relevant, yet it's what we thrive on. We love to quote-unquote geek out about, you know, those things, but to most senior executives, they just don't care about it in the context of those meetings. They want to know the so what.
Yeah.
And again, it's the so what that we're so scared to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that, and at least from my experience, it's how we present it, because you're right, like when you start talking with those folks, they want to get to the point. And I think of myself, a couple of years ago, I was working with Evan LaPointe on a few things. And one of the things he pointed out in my communication style, which was turning out to be a fatal flaw, is I wanted to tell this big story. You know, when I would present to somebody, I wanted to tell this grand plan of where we're slowly building. I kind of give the precursor of what the problem is and the steps we've taken, what we found and what we're building to, and then ultimately have this big reveal at the end. And he's like, you lost him on slide two. You need to flip it around. You need to start with that executive summary and this is the point. This is what we're doing. This is what we found. We're going to talk about how we got there. We're going to talk about the story, but you need to lead with that end in mind to keep their attention. You're not keeping their attention telling this long meandering story.
Yeah. And you are not alone in that. I think it's something that for some reason, that is the thing that we love to do as analysts. And I'm grateful that when I was client side, I did that and was promptly told, don't do that again. Yeah, I had done this analysis and I was so excited about what I had found and the process it took me to get there. And I had an opportunity to present to our executive suite. And I think I was 12 slides in of talking about like this process of discovery I went through and how I untangled this mystery. And then I said, and here's what I found. And I can't remember who it was. It was someone in the C-suite. I think it was our CAO. He's like, Jason, that's literally slide two. Why did you make us sit here through all this to get this is the slide? But we do. We really enjoy being in that moment of telling everyone the process it took us to get there and how we solved this complex problem. And again, I think that can be valuable, but we've got the order wrong. It's, you know, we're not writing a Hollywood script where we're like building up to this huge ta-da. It's a just give it to them and then show them how you got to that.
Yeah, because I was, and one of the things it became clear when I took Evan's advice and flipped around my presentation style of getting to the point first and then the details, everything really started to change. And today I had a subtle reminder of that. I was on the phone with a client and like our executive stakeholder jumped on the call. But we were kind of just joking around a bit before we got started. And he was telling me like, he's like, it was one of those days where I'm double and triple booked in meetings. And the reason, like when we take that initial approach, where I was talking about where we kind of lay out the problem and tell this grand story, sometimes we kind of take it personally and think like, oh, they don't care about it. It's not that they don't care. It's you have to tell them why to care. Because in this case, in many of these cases, these are folks that are in just a slew of meetings all day. Their calendar is booked all day. You need to tell them right from the get-go, this is the meeting to give me all of your attention. And here's why. And I will give you the details that are relevant after I get your attention and say, this is what's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious if Evan gave you any insights into why you do that or why we tend to do that in general, where we get the order wrong.
I think I'll be honest with you, I don't completely remember. He just got to the point saying, you're doing it wrong. Here's why you have to change it. I really take it as something, it's human nature. We love to tell stories. We love to tell stories. We love to kind of get to that exciting point, or the build to a crescendo or build to a reveal. We love telling stories. I enjoy being a storyteller. Like, I think it's one of the reasons why I'm able to connect with people is I was joking with a client last week I was on site with. I'm like, dude, I'm an oversharer. I definitely kind of get into like, hey, this is what we're doing work-wise. And oh yeah, by the way, last night I was up with the kids late. This happened. This one was puking, yada, yada, yada. I am a bit of a sharer in that way, but I like to tell stories. And I think that's what it is it's the wanting to tell a story and wanting to tell like a typical plot of beginning, middle, end. And there's a common thread throughout it. And you tell the end at the end, where in this case, when you're dealing with executives and you're trying to get outside of your immediate program, getting outside of the analytics program, getting outside of the development groups, you got to get to the end right away. You got to tell these people why today this is the most important meeting on your calendar, and here's why, and then I'm going to get to the detail.
Yeah, and I think it's really great advice as analysts and implementers, because if nothing else, we need to be empathetic with our stakeholders' time. You know, they're incredibly busy. If you look at their calendars, it would make you puke, speaking of puke. And so I think we need to be a little bit empathetic that we don't have, you know, 90 minutes to build up to this huge crescendo, as you put it. Their time is very compressed, and we should be empathetic to that fact. And if nothing else, use that as a driver to say, and have we talked about the upside down pyramid approach before?
We have, right? In, like, the past.
Yeah, where, you know, I got a chance to intern at the local newspaper back in the day when newspapers were kind of a thing. And I learned about that thing that most readers there's no readers that are going to read every article in the paper. And even the articles they do read, most people don't read the entire article. And writers know this, and so they use the upside down pyramid of, if they read nothing else but the first one or two paragraphs, they're going to know everything they need to know about the story. They're not going to miss any critical details. Everything else below is kind of more context and nuance and interesting things around the story. But if they read the first two paragraphs, they'd have what they need to know. And so that's how they write. You know, we need to take that approach as analysts when we're talking with our stakeholders. If all they see is the first two slides, they'll have all the information they need to know. Everything else is supportive of that. And, you know, if they don't read it, they're not going to miss the story.
Yes. And one last thing on this, and then we'll move on to the next point, is you mentioned being empathetic with the time from these people. And again, going back to what our initial question is what is preventing digital analytics from becoming indispensable for an organization? So you're trying to get the attention of these people. Is being empathetic with it? Yes, their calendars are insane. And they're also multitasking in meetings. You know, people are, while they're in meetings, people are still trying to get their attention. Like, hey, did you see this email? Or I sent this to you. I need your time for that. So again, you got to get to the point of why I need your attention, why this is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that brings us into our segue for the last item that you mentioned, you know, when we first kicked this off, is the blocker with actually like providing an opinion. So stop being, you know, like we are as analysts, as implementers, we like to fence sit, you know, well, this could be this or it could be that, but it's the get off the fence and actually provide an opinion. Because if we kind of use that previous item as a bit of a talking point, again, these people are also not just get to the point and tell me why this is important. Tell me what I need to do. What is the data telling us we need to do? So if you take the first step and get right to the point and get their attention, but then come in with, well, it could be this, it could be that, they're going to tune right back out again. And then again, you're not seen as indispensable that someone can come in with an educated opinion on a particular topic.
Yeah, not only indispensable, you know, think about the massive leaps forward that generative AI is taking. If we're not taking a stance, if we're not kind of giving an opinion from our experience, from everything, how easily are we going to be replaced by a machine that can crunch the numbers and output the results? What's missing is that human so what and what should we do piece from generative AI. So if nothing more than securing our job, I think this is something we really need to address and address quickly. Why do you think that is, that we tend to stop at providing the data? Do we feel like it's not our job to move past that? Is it, do we feel like we don't have the qualifications to have an opinion? Like what do you think is causing us to stop at the place that we're stopping at?
It's fucking scary.
It is very scary.
It is scary to, it's easy. Well, okay. Relatively. It's easy to say, hey, this is what I found. This is what it could be. It is scary to take the next step and say, this is what we should do. Not, well, we could do this or we could do that. This is what we should do. Like, we've talked about before, you know, there's the whole thing with like friends in other departments and everything like that. So there is part of it that, you know, are you saying that, you know, you might be friends with people on product, but do you have the data that shows that the new feature that they launched is actually a major detractor to conversion? You know, to not want to hurt people's feelings. Like, yeah, it was really cool. I know you worked really hard on it, but the data is saying that it's, you know, actually it's reduced conversion by 10% because we found this in the data. But I think it does ultimately come back to it's being scary to actually put your name to something to say, the data says this, we should do this, because you could be wrong.
Yeah.
But still, it's, I think that's the root of it. It's easy to offer options. It's easy to offer suggestions. It's hard to take what seems to be a subtle next step, but it is a big next step to say, this is what we absolutely should do.
Yeah. And so two things to that, and we can wrap up, is one, and again, it's the same CEO that I learned so many valuable lessons from. I was in that situation where I was very critical of a marketing effort that we were undertaking, and got a pretty big talking down to from the VP of marketing. And the CEO stepped in and said, if that wasn't happening, I would be worried you weren't doing your job. And he's like, I'm not asking you to go and upset and piss people off, but in your role, you're going to ruffle some feathers. And if I'm not hearing from people that Jason's poking around and upsetting us, then I'm worried you're not doing your job. So that's number one. And number two, I think maybe a way of helping soften this a little bit is the business isn't asking us to make a decision. We don't have all of the information. We don't own the thing. They are asking us for an informed opinion. They're asking us for our insights and recommendations. And they are going to, again, take that among other things and then make a decision, because they own the thing they're making a decision on. So if it helps kind of soften it by us giving our recommendation, it's not a, okay, they're going to take that and just do it. They're not. They're going to evaluate it amongst other things. And so it's just an opinion. It's a recommendation, but one that they really want and really value. So let's get over this kind of fear so that we can offer that to them and truly get to that level where we are just indispensable, because they are really valuing that insight. And again, not only the insight, but the so what and what do you think we should do?
And I think it's evaluating those areas of your analytics program. And like, if you're at the senior director level, like, is your team kind of faltering in some of these areas that is preventing them from becoming indispensable? Or like, if you're on the ground within these organizations, like, be a little self-introspective, and because we all need to at times, and we all fall into patterns that may actually be hurting us. But I think, again, the end goal is are we taking steps that, you know, makes us indispensable? Because again, like, let's go back to our example of like those businesses that, you know, people, you know, call boring yet profitable. Like, they're indispensable to their customers.
Absolutely.
And while they may not be flashy, they may not have like the most posh of storefronts, customers love to go there because they get reliable products. They know the company itself is reliable, and they know they're going to get the level of service they need. They're like, again, one last tie in is, if you go into some of these supply companies that are just like this, when I think of this concept, I think of various supply companies. You walk into a plumbing supply company, you're going to be able to tell them what you need, and they're going to be able to say, you know, they're not going to turn around and say, well, you could do this, you could do that. They're going to say, here's what you need. Mm-hmm. This is what you need.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's what they're looking for. That's what our stakeholders are looking for.
Yeah. So good chat. It was good to get back into the studio again after a few weeks. And we're going to continue this theme for a couple more episodes because it's fun to look at. And I think it's ultimately like getting down to the root of it. It's getting away from like the flashy stuff, getting away from the newest tool. It's how do you make your program invaluable to your organization?
It's a good and very timely topic.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up there and we'll talk to everyone later.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of 33 Tangents. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and review the show on your favorite podcast aggregator so others can find us. If you would like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at 33tangents.33sticks.com. 33 Tangents is a production of 33 Sticks, an analytics boutique.